meet the goals for the summer chums, and to have harvestable surplus on summer chum, and then to see the fall chum coming in strong at the beginning. This is good. This is what we've been waiting for. It shouldn't have taken 4 or 5 years to rebound. It did, but they're starting to. And so it's just really important that we don't get so excited that we decide to ignore closures and go fishing, because then we won't see those wins on the spawning ground. We won't see those extra fish. We won't meet those goals. And then that affects us 4 and 5 more years from now. So I know it's tough to watch good, healthy fish going by, but we just really want to ask you to hang in there and keep helping us try to meet the goals as best we can. Thanks very much, and we'll stand by.
Thank you, Holly. We will move on to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do we have Jacqueline or Evelyn? Jacqueline or Adam, are you online? I do not see them on my list. So we'll go ahead and...
Adam's in the field setting up fishing branch.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure about Jacqueline.
Okay, we'll go ahead and move into organizational reports. Do we have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission online? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. And if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute.
Hi, Serena.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My name's Jim Simon with the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. I believe that last week our executive director, Craig Chifluck, noted that we had a working session with several of our executive council members, but we have an upcoming executive council meeting scheduled for August 24th. And we encourage those of you from Yukon River communities to contact your fish commissioner and make sure they touch base with their executive council member and share any concerns, observations, et cetera, that you would like them to take to the upcoming meeting on the 24th. And that's all I have for the time being. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Do we have anyone from the BBAYK group online?
Hi, Serena.
Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is Karen Gillis with Bering Sea Fishermen's Association, and we host a call every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. for residents within the Bristol Bay, Arctic, Yukon, Kuskokwim, as well as Chignik and Canadian communities, as well as we include people who not only live in those regions but serve organizations or work for organizations that serve those regions. As an update, we are sending a list of questions to the candidates that are running for governor, U.S. Senate, U.S. Representative. Those should be asked at the Kodiak Fish Debate, which is coming up in early September. And we asked for questions from people around the regions, and I think we got, quite a few, some that were for all candidates. I think there were 5 for all candidates, 4 4-5 for U.S. Senate, and 4 for U.S. Representative candidates. And so I will get those to the Kodiak team, and that event will be live streamed, and I can share that information maybe next week, but it will be on, I think, KMXT is the radio station, but it will also be live streamed through the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce. So I'll make sure to have those details next week. The other thing coming up is there will be proposals submitted as agenda change requests to the Board of Fisheries for their October work session. That meeting is October 28th and 29th, and the deadline for agenda change request or proposals is August 28th. So we're tracking those and sort of facilitating a number of submissions for that August 28th deadline. I think I mentioned the last time I was on here that we have raised concerns about the Secretary of Commerce, Secretary Lutnick's appointment of Forrest Bowers, who is the Deputy Commissioner at Department of Fish and Game, to an independent or public seat of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, which is the federal fisheries management council for waters 3 to 200 miles off the Alaska coast. Our concern is outlined in a July 10th letter to the Department of Law asking them to review whether or not there would be conflicts of interest through the Alaska Executive Branch Ethics Act. We also raised concerns about ADFNG's one voice policy because the Department of Fish and Game, through the commissioner, already maintains a voting seat on the council, and adding Forrest in a public seat raises concerns for us about whether or not he would have the independence to, you know, potentially vote differently than the commissioner. And under the one voice policy, we don't think he can. So those concerns were raised, and I'll just keep folks posted about any communications we hear back. There are a couple of legislators who are also inquiring on the issue, and the issue has been raised at the AFN Subsistence Committee as well. So I think additional outreach and inquiries are going to be sent directly to Secretary Lutnick. We are doing that ourselves, but also others, I expect, will be reaching out and highlighting those concerns. So if folks are interested in participating in the Thursday morning 9 a.m. calls, they can email me or call me. My email address is Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at bsfaak.org. And my phone number, you can call or text me at 907-887-1148. Diana, thanks, Serena.
Thank you.
Serena, can you hear me now? This is Jacqueline with Department of Fisheries and Oceans.
Yes, Jacqueline, I can. Please provide your report.
Okay. Yeah, so sorry, I couldn't seem to come off mute on my work cell, so I have just switched phones. So good afternoon, everyone. Apologies for the delay here. My name is Jacqueline Kendall, and I am currently the acting Yukon River Operations Manager for the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. And I'm going to just run through a bit of an update on some stock assessment information, environmental conditions, and finish off with management. So our DFO crew is currently running the Porcupine Sonar, which is just downstream of Old Crow Yukon. And this is a collaborative project with the Vuntut Gwich'in First Nation. And as of August 9th, we've had a total of 941 Chinook estimated to have passed the sonar. So this is well above this time last year, which was just 329, but it is still well below the project average, which is over 2,100. So Chinook programming will be winding down, we suspect, there over the next week or so, and then we will transition to Chum. We also have crew on site in Eagle. We're hoping to support the Alaska Department of Fish and Game there with their project, as we do every year, and that's great. I do have a few updates for Yukon First Nation-led projects in Canada, and I'll just pause for one second, or a couple seconds actually, just to see if anyone is on the line representing Yukon First Nation governments to give the update, and if not, then I'll just go forward with providing some of the numbers that we're seeing right now. Okay, I don't hear anyone coming off mute, so I'll start, but if anyone is online and wants to give a little bit more of a further update on your projects, please do. So the Klondike River Sonar, which is run by Trondek Gwich'in First Nation in Dawson City, Yukon, has seen an estimated 351 Chinook pass as of August 1st. So it's a few days ago, we should be getting more updated information there, but that is above this time last year of 161, but again below that project average, which is 928. The Stewart River Sonar, which is run by the First Nation of Natsioniak Dene, is in its first year of operation, and they've estimated a total of 1,612 Chinook passed the site as of August 9th. The Pelly River Sonar is also up and running again this year, and that's run by Selkirk First Nation. It's located near Pelly Crossing, and they have seen an estimated 3,963 Chinook passed as of August 9th. So similar to the other projects, this is well above this time last year, so it was about 2,500 last year, but it is slightly below the project average, which is just over 4,200. The Nisutland Sonar, which is run by Teslin Tlingit Council, had 230 Chinook pass the sonar as of August 2nd. Again, well above this time last year at just 72. And lastly, the other final update I have for the other projects is the White Horse Fishway. This allows passage past the hydroelectric dam in White Horse, and it had its first Chinook passed on July 25th, and as of August 7th, they have a total of 34 so far. So this is still considered early on in the season for Chinook passage there, so we'll have more updates to come in the coming weeks. In terms of environmental conditions, water levels in most of the Yukon River tributaries are dropping, which is very normal for this time of year, and they remain within their normal ranges. Water temperatures at assessment sites that are being monitored have ranged between 12 and 16 degrees lately, and none of these sites have produced water temperatures reading over 18 degrees this season. So that's a good indication of positive migration for Chinook. Briefly, in terms of Canadian management, there are no new management actions to report since last week or those indicated pre-season in regards to Chinook salmon management. So although the Canadian origin Chinook forecast increased, we still won't see that 71,000 rebuilding target. So the public angling, which is the recreational fishery in Canada, will remain closed, and the closures in the commercial and domestic non-Indigenous boom fishery will be in place as well. So similar to Chinook with Chum, again, there has been an increase to projections, which is great to hear, great to see, but we are still not anticipating at this time that Canadian spawning objective goals will be met. So those pre-season management actions will remain in place, which are the closure of the public angling, commercial and domestic fishery. So that's it for me, Serena. And again, my apologies for being delayed there.
Great. Thank you, Jacqueline. Appreciate it. I'm glad you got back on.
Yes.
We'll continue with organizational reports with Council of Yukon First Nations, Elizabeth McDonald's out in the field right now, but she did write me an update. Let's see, they are out in the field working on better understanding and removing a few rainbow trout. These are invasive to the White Horse area. Otherwise, the weather has been hot, but the water is high. Most First Nations are out doing their salmon projects at the sonars, weirs, juvenile studies, elementary, and aerial surveys, and aren't in their offices. So 2 weeks ago, the Southern Lakes First Nation hosted a well-attended salmon day. There was glass blowing, salmon eggs made, fillet competitions, smoked sockeye, kids' activities, great food, and many other activities. That was her report. We'll move on to Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. Do I have anyone online? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to Yerdfa's report. And I'd just like to respond and make a statement. I know last week made a statement about illegal fishing. I received a lot of feedback, some supportive and some not. I just want to take the opportunity to reiterate what I was trying to say. You know, we can't ignore the fact that there are multiple factors contributing to the decline of our salmon. There are certainly things we can control and there are things we can't. My intention was not to place blame on any one person, community, or group. Rather, I believe we have to be willing to acknowledge that all the factors affecting our salmon and have the difficult conversations necessary to address the things that are within our control. A number of our community leaders and many of our organizations have been working countless hours attending meetings, participating in discussions, advocating for our communities, and trying to influence the changes that are desperately needed, not only to secure the future of our Yukon River salmon, but even throughout the state in different areas. I know my statement was difficult to hear for some, and I understand that emotions run high when we're talking about something as important and personal as our salmon. I'm willing to have those hard conversations. In fact, I believe we have to have them if we are going to move forward together. What was difficult, however, is when a difference of opinion turns into a personal attack. And I understand this comes with being in this position, but I'll take it just to improve myself. But I want to remain focused on doing what I hear from our leadership and our communities, and doing everything I can to contribute to efforts that sometimes seem impossible. One conversation I did have after the call last week was with an elder, and it really stayed with me. They reminded me that we need to keep thinking the people who are making the sacrifice not to fish. Those are the people who are making a difference. As I listen to our elders who provide me with guidance, I want to echo that message he told me. Thank you to everyone who has made that incredible, difficult decision not to fish for salmon. Your sacrifice matters. The improved numbers we are seeing this season are in part a reflection of the diligence of those who have chosen to allow those salmon to continue their journey to the spawning grounds. We may not always agree on every issue, and we may have difficult perspectives on what is contributing to our salmon declines. But we all share something important. We want our salmon to return to our rivers, to our communities, and to our generations, future generations. So rather than allowing our differences to divide us, I hope we can continue having the hard conversations, listening to one another, respecting our elders and our leaders, and working together on things we can change. To those who have sacrificed, to those who continue to advocate, and those who are doing their part to protect our salmon, Masi Cho, Gunashish, and Guyana, your sacrifices are making a difference, and the numbers are showing this year. So with that, I'd like to continue with our call and do the community level reports. We'll start in the headwaters in Canada. Old Crow, Dawson, White Horse, Mayo, Tully Crossing, Carmax, and Teslin. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute or unmute your line.
Serena. Hello, Serena.
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, this is Sven here in St. Mary's. I'm hearing something in the background. Someone's phone is not muted. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Again, we'll start with the community level reports in Canada. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute, and if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you'll still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. We'll go ahead and move into Alaska with District Y6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, Fairbanks.
Serena?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, this is Jim Simon. I'm from Salta, which is upriver from Fairbanks and the mouth of the Salta. I am hopeful that to see chum salmon up here like in the past and all the animals that come out to take advantage of those opportunities. I live right adjacent to the old Salchaket Fall Fish Camp, and there is an upwelling for fall chum salmon there, so I remain hopeful. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank you, Serena, for your comments last week. I wasn't able to be on, but I appreciated them being posted on social media, and just really appreciate you sharing that perspective. And, you know, as we better understand some of the research that's being done and the declining numbers of smolt that we're producing in river and putting out into the ocean, it is really important, in my personal opinion, to make sure that we get every salmon that we can to the spawning ground so as to not further delay rebuilding and transferring this crisis on to, into more years into the future and perhaps into the next generation. So thank you, Serena, so much. Bye.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. Again, calling on District Y6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. We'll go ahead and move into District Y5, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chilkeetsik, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, Eagle. We move into District Y5 in B10 at 10 Rapids, Rampart, Yukon River Bridge.
Hi, Serena. This is Carlissa in Fort Yukon.
Hello, Carlissa. Go ahead.
I spoke with about 4 households. One is fishing at the moment. They said they got a lot of whitefish, and the water's low, drift. We've been having rainy and sunny days, and that's my report this week. Thank you.
Thank you for your report.
Hi, Serena. This is Stan at Rapids. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Stan.
Okay, yeah, Stan's already at Rapids. The water level has been dropping slowly every day lately. The water temp was up the other day, took a surface reading at 61 degrees Fahrenheit. As of 2 days ago, last time I was on the river, there were 0 fish camps from Tanana to above Rampart Rapids with a person or people in them. Not much camp life in the days to come expected. The only activity most likely would be some people checking on camps for bear break-ins, which is what I'll be doing. You know, we go up and just check the camp, and which are there still in the, okay, that's it, I guess.
Okay, Stan, I think you were breaking up a bit. I'm not sure. Towards the end of your report there.
Just said not much camp life is expected in the days to come. People just checking on their camps every now and then for bear break-ins.
Oh, okay.
And, that was out of the report.
Okay, great. Thank you, Stan.
Yep.
We'll move into the Keokuk River. Do we have anyone from Hooslea, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, or Bedells on the line?
Hi, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Jasmine Bent. I currently reside in Fairbanks, but I've been asking relatives in Hooslea about fishing, and on Saturday one of my cousins got 3 pike, 4 whitefish, and 1 dogfish, and they let the dogfish, they let it go alive, and they're fishing with rod and reel. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Jasmine. Anyone else from the Keokuk River communities? We'll move into District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Mulatto, and Keokuk. District Y4A and C, Ruby and Galena. We'll move into District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, and Shagluk. We'll move on to District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station, and Marshall.
Serena?
Yes, go ahead, Sven.
Yeah, hey, this is Sven here. Not to report fishing-wise, but we've had some weird weather lately. We had some high winds last week and a half ago. Last couple of days, it's been really nice and sunny. Aside from the fisheries, there's been kind of a bust, I guess you'd say, on the berry season this year. Salmon berries, not much locally. Folks are having to travel way downriver, Cotlick, Black River, that area, those areas for salmon berries. Blueberries aren't all that great. We still have that area that was burned locally here, so there's not much production. Other places, not as much blueberries as in the past, so we're kind of waiting on what happens. I did have a question for Fish and Game or someone regarding fall chum numbers.
Yes, go ahead.
Can we ask questions now, or do you have to wait till later?
Nope. The floor is open for questions.
All right. I understand that the for Chinook, the patches at pilot, there's a certain percentage. I've heard between 40% and 50% of pilot station Chinook are bound for Canada. Is there something similar for the fall chum numbers we're seeing out of pilot station? The last information I got from just the last couple of days was 413,000 fall chums past pilot, and the median cumulative this time is about 294. So I'm just wondering what, if there's some sort of a percentage that Fish and Game uses to kind of assess the possible escapement into Canada for fall chums.
Yes, and we do have the first set of genetics went in, and a bunch of those fish were still summer chum in the first group through August 2nd. And then during that windstorm you were talking about, we had a big pulse of fish come through, and those genetics are on the way to the lab now. But looking at them based on the historical proportions that go by this time of year, it's roughly out of the 413, I think, in the pilot today, about 300,000 of those are we assume they're fall chum at the moment. We'll have more information on that when we get this next genetics back. And then after that, most of the run will be 90-95% fall chum. So we're really going to look at that one. And then within there, once we get farther into the run, we will be looking at the Canadian stocks compared to the upper U.S. and the Panama stocks. And the Canadian ones are the ones we're going to be watching really hard to see if we can make that goal and make those projections. But each time we get a genetic set, we send in the samples after a pulse goes by. So right now we're waiting for the next pulse before we get enough fish to send in, and we want to look at each pulse. So the big one we just had is on the way to the lab, and we'll have more to report next week, hopefully, on that, and we'll let you know how many Canadian fish it says is in there and where we are up to date when we get those back.
All right. Thanks. Do you guys have, like, some sort of historical data, kind of a percentage-wise, from what percentage to what percent as a low and high, just from previous number of counts and the ASL numbers? I'm just curious.
Yeah, the ASL stuff is all online. You can get to it anywhere. The genetics data, you have to that one isn't in our system. We get that from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Mm-hmm.
And we put out the historical numbers. We will think that pretty soon, if you have signed up for the public Yukon River Daily Updates.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so we'll be adding a new page for the genetic stuff here shortly, and it'll give you the daily passage of the genetics and compare that to the average for that time of year. So that'll be coming out as soon as we're waiting for a little bit better genetics, and then when we get more of that, it'll be coming out.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
Okay.
That's all I have, Serena.
Yeah, and the historical averages are in your JTC reports then. There's a table in there of all the, how much summer chum, fall chum, and each of those three fall species, the averages are in there for every year from 04 to present in one of those tables.
Thanks.
Okay, we will remain in District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station in Marshall.
Hi, Serena.
Hi, Nita. Go ahead.
Hi. I don't really have much to update, but people are, like, that guy from Pilots are people from our village have to travel either upriver towards St. Mary's or downriver to pick sandberries and blueberries. There's not much at home, and there's no fishing activity going on right now that I know of.
Great. Thank you, Nita.
Yep. You're welcome.
Karina Francis.
Hi, Francis. Go ahead.
I had a question. We're at 415,000 of that 310,000 Alaska boundary. And by regulation, when you reach 380,000, you allow for some kind of fishery. Is there a range, 380,000 to what? And in the past, when they reached 380, they opened a minimal subsistence fishery, be it 3-hour opener or 6-hour opener, in a day or 18 hours in a week or something like that. It wasn't a total shutdown. And I was kind of curious about the toll cut. I think it's the toll cut. In 1 year, they had closed the headwaters of toll cut for harvest for dog food. So they did that. Folks were coming over the range and getting a pulchum for their dog feed from the Yukon. Is that still going on? The toll cut. Country toll cut.
Yeah, the Toklat River comes off of the Kantishna River, and there's nobody fishes on the Toklat per se. It's the Kantishna River where the fish go up, and there's a few households there that used to fish. There's hardly anything there now. There's not a fishery issue on the Kantishna River at this time. As far as your question about the Skamakal range is 300 to 600,000, but we still have to, which we're above that, but we still have to make our other goals, and the Canadian goals are the ones we're watching right now, and we have the Chandler goal or the Trajanic. When we start projecting if we're going to meet that one, that's where we would look to see if we could have harvest there like we did a few years ago when we met that goal, but we still have to meet the Canadian goal before we can even open the fisheries, even though we're above the 300,000. So we're still waiting. We need more fish.
So what happens if you get to 500,000, 550,000? Are we still going to be close to, you determine there's going to be enough upriver?
We need 70,000 at the Canadian border. So
yeah,
we're waiting to see if we're going to get above that.
What about if we get 500,000, 600,000 past the sonar? Are we still going to wait for your analysis to see if 70,000 will float by? And she'll be
70,000 to the board. If we have 500,000, we still have to wait until we project over 70,000 fish to go by Eagle for Canada.
Mm-hmm. And the annual or the estimated harvest is maximum about 130,000 balsam drainage way. Historical harvest for balsam.
Yeah, the average, the Alaska side used to take about 80,000. It would be less than that now because a lot of the dog teams aren't there anymore. So not expecting huge amounts, but we can't afford to do that right now while we're trying to make these goals.
So what was it early on messaging about opening fall chum when we reach certain numbers? Now we're saying that we're going to need to reach 70,000 across the border?
I can jump in.
That's always been we have more than one goal, and that has always been the case. We've always had to meet the drainage wide as well as these other goals for Canada and Chandelier and Delta. And we used to have one on the Toklat and the Sheenjack and those different rivers. Whenever those goals are in place, we have to meet both of them, and that it takes longer time to, in these poor year, you know, this is the first year we've had a good run off of this, and we still have to wait until we make sure we make the goals. But the problem is the river is so long, and the fall chum spawn way in the upper part of the reaches that it takes longer to figure out than it would, for summer chum, say, because they're not going that far. So it's easier. So it's going to be difficult, and we still have to wait.
Hi, Francis. This is Matt Olson, their Alaska Harbor Fish Game fall season manager. Yeah, from what I was saying before, there was that the numbers are looking good, and it looks like we're going to meet at least that minimum of the drainage wide escapement goal of 300,000. So that means what we can do, if we were going to open up some directed fall chum fishing, it would have to be in tributaries off of the main stem Yukon, areas where we weren't going to be affecting or potentially affecting those fish that were getting across the border. So the main stem would still, you know, have to remain closed until we are going to be projecting to meet that Canadian treaty objective. But in areas where those fall chum aren't going across the border, those could potentially be open. So just to clarify what I was saying earlier.
Yeah. Well, we have Shirin, I'm sorry. You don't mind? We have a management strategy or plan for the Yukon River. And it stipulates that these numbers, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And those were Board of Fisheries approved. And now we're saying we're closing till we see numbers in the streams. If that's the case, then the 380,000 to 500-something thousand was the number for those streams to meet their spawning escapement objectives. So are we looking at 700,000, 800,000 now, or what?
Can I just jump in here and take a stab at it? This is Holly at Fish and Wildlife Service, and I think you're asking really good questions. Because, yes, you're hitting the nail on the head, and I think what hasn't really been articulated on this call yet is that, you know, back in the day, we probably could go fishing at 300 or 400 or 500,000 fall chum because the Canadian component used to be stronger and was able to meet those goals. So if we were meeting the drainage-wide goals, we were likely meeting the Canadian goals. We were likely even exceeding the Canadian main stem goals. But what happened with the Canadian stock is it's gotten so poor, the average the last 5 years is 12%. So if you kind of just do kind of back of the envelope math, yeah, if we only see 11% Canadian fall chum, and they have to be fall chum, so remember Bonnie explained the almost 300,000 we've seen so far, a bunch of those are summer chum, so they don't count as Canadian fall chum. So we got to use the genetics, we got to use the percent summer chum. And then, yeah, you're starting to say, well, then you need at least over 700,000 fall chum if we only have 11% Canadian. And then any fishing we do in the main stem could be catching those Canadian fish and making it more impossible to meet the goal. And so you're right, that management plan that you keep referencing, it doesn't mention the border goal at all. And at the recent Board of Fish, we at Fish and Wildlife Service were involved in the discussion around some proposals that were kind of changing the language there. And we recommended mentioning the border goal because managers are considering that. We are taking that into consideration, and we are having to be conservative if we're going to fail to meet those goals in Canada. And yet they're not mentioned in the domestic management strategy for fall chum. So it is, I think it would be good to add it in there because we're using it. And so it's a little confusing to folks like you that read it and say, hey, it says at 300, you could go subsistence fishing. You're not wrong. But managers have been incorporating that border goal for a long time. And the only reason we're failing to meet that border goal, even though the fall chum run is better, is that that Canadian stock is way weaker than it should be. It should be 25% of the run. And it's half that. So that's hopefully that clarifies for you that we need to project well over 700,000 to know that we're going to meet those border goals before we could open the main stem.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and move on to District Y1. Nunam Alohanok Imanak in Salt Lake.
Hello, Serena.
Hi,
this
Marvin.
Is Marvin. Good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, this is Marvin in Kotlik. Not much fishing effort going on or none besides I heard from one person that went out to the coast like over the weekend, and she was able to get some Cisco fish to bring to family in Anchorage. So that's the only thing I've heard so far. No one going out in a Kotlik slough here, going to the lakes yet for whitefish or anything. People being patient for better weather and better passage for fall chums and the more abundant silvers to come for any kind of fishing. It was good for salmon berries here. A lot of them got ready, ripened up late over the weekend when the good weather came. There's some blueberries, which is good, that some people were able to go pick. And moose are getting fatter, I guess, but haven't heard anyone catching it, harvesting a moose yet. Seals showing up in the rivers, good, decent tidal surges as of late, maybe 4 to 4.5 feet tides early in the morning, and the mean water level when it drops down, it's still in the positives yet, not getting very low, so, but it is, some days it's just dropping, it just depends on the wind too. Over here. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Marvin. We'll stay in District Y1. Nunam Alohanak Imanak, Kotlik. We'll move on to the coastal communities of Chiva, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. I'll go ahead and open up the floor and for any questions or discussion, comments.
Karina.
Yes, go ahead, Fran.
Before looking at raising the bar on Balsam, then we need to really get at Area M because they're probably the ones intercepting the late season salmon. So getting worrisome, you know, folks who are looking at 380,000, 400,000 to at least maybe have a couple of openers or by the hours, not by the day-long fishing effort, but minimal. So I hope that happens. And we're optimistic that there's going to be more sponsors coming, looking at the cumulative efforts and the cumulative numbers on that green scale there. So hopefully things look up. Thank you.
Thank you, Fran. And I don't know if Karen Gillis is still online, but I believe that's what the agenda change request is for the upcoming Board of Fish meeting.
Yep, you're right, Serena. Thank you.
The floor is open for any other questions, comments, discussion.
Hi, Serena, this is Marvin again.
Yes, go ahead, Marvin.
I will add to what Fran just stated. For years and years, Fish and Game has held a double standard on commercial fishing and subsistence fishing. Even though I grew up doing both and enjoyed commercial fishing because it brought money into our region over the years, and people were able to do a lot more with that earnings. Some were able to go to school, college, vocational training, and buy their outboards instead of herding when necessary. Boats, new boats, everything. Now our commercial fishing hasn't been in effect for like the seventh summer now. And you can see the hardship that goes around in each community. Boats up on the bank, some boats being sold that haven't been fished for years. The economic impact is greater than anything. It's just like a big recession in our area. Yet you see area M fishermen fishing. Intercepting our salmon that are bound for AYK, not only the Yukon, and a lot of it is undocumented, thrown overboard, trucking. We all know this because it has happened in the past, and there hasn't been any enforcement down there. But it's just disheartening to keep hearing that our subsistence way of life is being targeted 100% and then changed as the season progresses, which really needs to be changed throughout the whole board, the whole areas that fish, intercept fishes of Area M, which basically all it is an intercept fisheries. Although that area and Bristol Bay have provided jobs for local young men that want to go fishing and go make a living for their families, which are able to, who don't have jobs, and it's just tough. But adjust to everyday life. It has really changed everyone here on the Yukon. King season, subsistence cuts, fall season, the health of our people, and everything else that goes along with it. So that's my 2 cents there. Thank you.
Thank you, Marvin. Again, the floor is open for any questions, discussion, or comments.
Good afternoon, this is David Walker.
Hi, David, go ahead.
In Holy Cross, I was waiting for official reporters to come on earlier to report, but I guess hardly anybody get on anymore. There's absolutely no fishing here, zero. People are talking about setting nets for whitefish sometime soon. But yeah, there's just nothing going on as far as fishing. The water is dropping slow. And yeah, I appreciate your patriotic speech you made last meeting, and I could agree with you almost 100%, Serena. That was really good for you to bring that out. There's just one part that kind of bothered me was I know, you know, we're not all perfect with words, but our way of life is not just a feeling. It's a way of life that we lived for thousands of years. And I know there's a dominant race or group, whatever, they want to erase our history. They want to erase Black history and all the people of color's history. And that's definitely like genocide, killing our way of life. We never harmed our waters and our fish for thousands of years, like I said, until commercial fishing came along and the trawlers came along. Now we're hurting. It's history in the East Coast and the West Coast. They're finally starting to get their fish back after they chased the trawlers out. It's maybe other factors, but, you know, like I say, I fish all winter and I catch abundance of whitefish. I give them to the villages. There's no heat stroke going on with those freshwater fish. They're thriving, I know. I just pull my net because I'm catching too much. I didn't want to be greedy. So, thank you for your time. And yeah, the pressure is on. I know the people are upset. They don't. It's probably why they don't attend the meeting no more. So, thank you.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your words. Yeah, we do have a lot of callers. Last week we had 70. A little down this week, but there's still more than 50 people online. They just choose not to say anything. There's probably here for information as well. So, again, the floor is open for any comments or questions and discussion. Yes, Fran, go ahead.
One item before I forget about it. You know, what's amazing this summer is the amount of salmon that came into the river above and beyond our projected forecast. I want to mention something before the trawlers take credit for all this year. because of their avoidance, you know, we've got some abundance, but really, this winter was a very extremely cold winter. We had 40 days of 20 below or more, as low as 40 below.
The ice was very thick in our rivers, and then out in the ocean, the ice went way south, south of the Pribilof Islands. I don't know how far down, but I heard some comment that some folks down in the Aleutian were amazed at how far the ice came down this this winter. I was kind of curious, and I want to say that the ice moving down attributed to our abundance here, and because the fleet was not on their A season grounds early on. So I hope that the department or Fish and Wildlife or IRTFA or the Fish Salmon Commission kind of look into this and see what happened here. So I want to make mention of that, and I hope that when we go to the IRTFA meeting or to a Salmon Commission meeting that they bring out forth the, you know, their guess of what contributed to the abundance of salmon into the Yukon. Thank you.
Thank you, friend, for your suggestion.
This is Virgil in Fairbanks.
Hi, Virgil. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got passed over a little bit ago. I wanted to say a few words today. Anyway, my grandson has been sport fish guiding on the Trina, and then he's over on the Chattanooga once in a while. Last week, he was over on the Chattanooga one day, and he counted over 12 king salmon, which is good, on the Chattanooga, and that's up about 5 or 6 miles past where the lodge is for people that know about that. And then on the Trina, he's been seeing a few kings too, and he saw a few chums just the other day. But I have friends and people that work with me in Hooslea, and they actually had a pretty good chum fishery over in Hooslea this year. And then our Thursday meeting that we have that Karen spoke about a while ago, one of the scientists that's on that all the time, he was up in Clear Creek on the Haugatza River and saw a lot of fish a week ago. But that's in the Koyukuk drainage. I think the majority of those summer chums that went past the Anvik went up the Koyukuk River, because they sure as hell didn't go up the Sheena and the Salsha. And that's the only places they get counted. And I know Bonnie was on a call a while ago, but I have a question for her. And that's concerning the genetics on the fall chums. And I know that here lately, the last 3 years at least, maybe 4 years, that are roughly 60% plus or minus percent or two of the fall chums that went past Pilot Station genetically were Tanana River bound. What does that look like right now, and how far up are the genetics by the date? Have they been analyzed that you know about? Thank you.
Yeah, Virgil, we've only analyzed through August 2nd, and the Tanana fall fish aren't really, there's not a whole lot here yet because, you know, they build throughout the season. Right now, there's approximately 14,000 in that front group that might be headed to the Tanana. But there'll be a lot more after we get, you know, the next pulse especially, and then, it just keeps increasing for the Tanana. But it'll be a while before we have a number for there.
Okay, and how are the genetics for the main stem in Canada looking so far? You just haven't seen enough of them to know yet.
Well, right now it's only up to about between 4,000 and 6,000 in the country. and bounds include zero. So yeah, there's nothing so far in the samples. There should be more in the big group that we're gonna analyze next. There should be some Canadian stocks in there, and hopefully enough to get some confidence bounds on it.
Do you have an estimate of when that stuff will be analyzed and released to the public from this big?
Well, they're being shipped. Yeah, they're being shipped today, and if they get to Anchorage tonight, it'll take them the rest of the week probably to analyze them, and I'm hoping to get the sample or the data back on Friday, but it could be next week, early, like Monday.
Okay, so we should know that at the next Tuesday's meeting. We should have that information then.
Yeah, I hope so. It'll be the big pulse that we just had of a couple hundred thousand fish. It's going to be that group. So, yeah, we're going to be really interested in seeing what we got out of that.
Okay, that's good. But I know, you know, Coosley only has three or four guys that actually go out and really fish every year, or hope or try to at least. And those guys did good this year. I do know that because I just called one of them, well, two guys, Sean Huffman and Alvin Atla. I hauled them down in Enana day before yesterday and to head to Hoosie, and they just got to Hoosie a while ago, called me and told me. But anyway, I know those guys did pretty good fishing, better than they've done. Of course, they haven't even got to fish hardly any, but they figured out how to catch them with a dip net, which is something, because my daughter was insisting we go try to fish with the dip net last week when it opened, and we went down to where we would have run our fish wheel. It's parked and kind of dilapidated now down there, but I didn't think we'd catch a fish, and we didn't. That's all I have. Thanks.
I'll do one last call for any questions, comments, or discussion. Thank you guys for your time today. Appreciate it. Great conversations and questions from everyone. We have two more calls of the season, so tell your neighbor, tell your friend, tell your wife to call in, and we'll talk with you next week. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sharina.
Welcome.
Thank you, Sharina.
Thanks, Sharina.
Have a good week.
Thanks, Sharina.
Enjoy your weekend, Sharina.
Thank you.